Hello and welcome to the Sydney Institute podcast. The Institute is Australia's premier current affairs forum. Every week, contemporary political, social, cultural and economic issues are explored at the Institute through dialogue and discussion. This podcast was recorded recently at a members' forum in the city of Sydney. Thanks for listening, and for more information about the Sydney Institute, please visit www.thesydneyinstitute.com.au. We hope you enjoy this event.
Thanks for coming along tonight, and it's good that Mark Berder of the Australian Institute of Polish Affairs told us that Professor Rotfeld would be in Australia today, and we're able to put this on. We had a choice of Friday or Monday. We took Monday, but we've got a busy week coming up this week. So it's great to have Professor Rotfeld here, and also welcome to the Polish Consul General in Sydney, Daniel Grohman. Adam Bird is here, and Professor Rotfeld's here. So I'll introduce our speaker very briefly. Professor Rotfeld is the former Minister of Foreign Affairs of the Republic of Poland from January 2005 to October of the same year. He's chairman of the United Nations Secretary General's Advisory Group on Disarmament Matters, chairman of the Polish-Russian Group for Difficult Matters, or co-chairman of the Polish-Russian Group for Difficult Matters. He was recently invited by Gareth Evans to be on the advisory board of the International Commission on Nuclear Non-Proliferation and Disarmament, and he's recently become one of what's called the Wise Men, although it's chaired by a woman, which is probably the only way to pull this together, chaired by Madeleine Albright. He's a member of the expert group for the new strategic concept of NATO. But today, Professor Rotfeld accepted our invitation to talk on the more broader topic of Poland and Russia, but of course these other matters he'd be willing to take up during question and discussion. So it's a normal procedure at Sydney Institute, about a half an hour talk, half an hour question and discussion, finished no later than 7 o'clock. Professor Rotfeld, you're very welcome. Thank you.
Thank you very much for this invitation. I'm honored and pleased to be here. And my intention is, in fact, to say a few words of general character, and then I will try to respond to possible questions and comments. From Polish point of view, Russia is one of the great neighbors. As you know, Poland has a kind of the eternal dilemma between Germany and Russia. And for all Polish governments in the history of Poland, it was a problem whether together with Germany against Russia, or together with Russia against Germany, or as it happened in the period between the two wars, balancing between both of them, and to take a kind of the equal distance to Moscow and Berlin. And this policy of balance and equal distance collapsed totally in the 1st of September 1939. As you know, it was preceded by the agreement between Molotov and Ribbentrop, and in fact it was a kind of the agreement between Hitler and Stalin, and that was concluded the 23rd of August 1939, about the fourth partition of Poland. Probably most of you know that Poland was divided between, by the end of 18th century, between three powers: Prussia, Russia and Austria, and was re-established in 1918 after the Versailles Treaty, and since November 1918 up to September 39. Yes?
Having trouble hearing, so let's work on this. Okay.
Yes, I will. And now it is better.
You just focus to a cork right into that.
Okay, I will try. Yes. My intention was to say that in those 20 years, Poland was really an independent, sovereign nation, and it was a problem how to organize its security. The problem was since two great neighbors, Weimar Republic in the west, and on the eastern side it was not Russia, but at the beginning it was Bolshevik Russia, which was later on transformed into the Soviet Union. Both of them were very negative about the Versailles Treaty, which established a new order, mainly for the reason that in fact they considered that the very existence of Poland is with the great detriment to both of them, because once it was offered to them the territory of the country by the end of 18th century, they considered that 120 years after it is a kind of the punishment as the result of the First World War. Germany, as you know, lost the war. Russia was not among the losers, but as the result of the Bolshevik Revolution, Russia was excluded from the great powers victors in that war. Nevertheless, relations between both of them were from the very beginning not the best. Germany declared that the frontier between Poland and Germany was full of blood and fire, Bluten der und Brennen der Grenze. That was, I would say, the expression used by Stresemann, the former foreign minister of Weimar Republic, who, by the way, was awarded by the Nobel Peace Prize. And I would like to say that quite often Peace Nobel Prize was offered to many people who did not deserve, and those who deserved, like Mahatma Gandhi, were never awarded for some reasons which were not understandable to me, because I have to say that before being invited to the Polish government in 2002, I served as the director of the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute, and in that capacity I belong to the group of people who served also for the Peace Nobel Foundation. I raised that question, how it happened that some people were never awarded, however, for obvious reason they deserved, and the others, like Menachem Begin or Kissinger, were awarded, however, they did not deserve. But this is a kind of the political question, and I would like not to speak about because it is a digression. My intention is to say that Polish very existence started from the hostility with two great neighbors. And the first war, which was in fact organizing Polish state, it was a war initiated by Soviet Russia, that Soviet Bolshevik Russia decided, I would say, to enter to Germany. And Poland was treated by them as a corridor. Fortunately, the Polish army, who was in the process of organization, very poor country with a lot of problems, nevertheless it was possible to stop them close to Warsaw, and as the result of this battle of Warsaw, where Poland won the war, with the war which was underestimated in many European capitals, because you can imagine the history if Russia would enter to Germany and support the revolutionary movement in Germany, which was in fact an intention. These two neighbors decided in 1939 to divide Poland once again, and in the private conversations they used, I would say, that term, the fourth partition of Poland, because Poland was divided by them by the end of 18th century three times, and that was the fourth one. Altogether, I would say, after the Second World War, Poland did not have a great choice, because Europe was divided. Soviet army was in the center of Europe, in Berlin, and Germany was divided. Poland was put under the Soviet domination, and many people are saying that it was the result of the Yalta Agreement of February 1945. And I would like to tell you that it is oversimplification. Poland was dominated by Russia not as the result of the Yalta Agreement. Poland was dominated by Russia as a result of the Second World War. With Yalta or without Yalta, Russian forces were in the center of Germany. And Yalta, in the eyes of those who signed an agreement in Yalta at the Crimean Conference, they were convinced, I have in mind Churchill and Roosevelt, that they have a kind of the document that Russia promised to re-establish Poland as a strong, democratic and free country. That was on paper, but unfortunately it happened only 45 years later in 1989. In 1989, Poland really was re-established as a free, sovereign country. It was not very strong, now it is much stronger, fortunately, and the result is that in 1989, for Poland, it was a new challenge, how to reorganize, how to redefine the relations with Russia. And Russia, as you know, or before the Soviet Union was dissolved the 26th December 91, and President Yeltsin, who took the position as president of the new Russian Federation, he has had an intention really to destroy the previous regime. One could say that there were some similarities between Lech Walesa and Boris Yeltsin, in a sense that both of them, they knew how to destroy. None of them was prepared to play the role to construct. So both in Poland, Walesa, in Russia, Yeltsin, after a few years were not very popular. They were not able to win the elections. In Poland, it was a democratic procedure. So Walesa lost his competition to President Kwasniewski. In Russia, it was organized in different way, but at the end of the day, President Walesa, President Yeltsin, decided to nominate as his successor Vladimir Putin. It happened at the beginning. The first stage was to appoint him as prime minister, later on as the president of the Russian Federation, and President Putin in fact initiated the very fundamental change in the Russian, new Russian statehood. In a sense that on one hand it was a problem, and I would like to be very fair and objective in presenting that Russia was really disorganized, in chaos. People lost life perspectives. Young new president has had the main task, what has to be done in order to offer for people better perspectives, to stabilize the situation, to make the country more predictable. It happened. Russia is now much more predictable, better organized, much more, I would say, oriented to play the role as a regional power with global aspirations. However, the problem is that the price for that stabilization was rather high. I have in mind that Russia was confronted with a dilemma whether to be a democratic country based on the rules of law or to be autocratic with a tradition very deep rooted in the Russian history of Ivan the Terrible, Catherine the Great, Peter the Great, and all the other tsars, up to the end with the great leader of the Russian nation who won the Second World War, Joseph Stalin. And in fact, I would say, in the search for the new Russian national identity, Putin and people around him, they considered that people of Russia should be proud of the country, mainly because of the great victory in the Second World War. And that was the opening of new stage of heroization of the Second World War. And Stalin, as a leader, is, I would say, a symbol of that victory. So we have a kind of the new ideology, because I would, even for Yeltsin, it was a problem. What kind of organizing principle, what kind of the consolidating ideology should be offered for people? Russians, they have had always a kind of the Russian idea, idea of Russia, Russian idea. And I do remember that Yeltsin once said to the people that we need a new Russian idea, please give me some suggestions, inspirations. Immediately many researchers sent him a lot of books with many volumes, what kind of Russian idea has to be. But as you know, the national idea is never the product of intellectuals, scientists, historians. It is, I would say, something what has to be inspired by the spiritual life of people. And in Russia, that spiritual life in the past was combined of many different elements. One of them was Orthodox Church, which was always very close to the throne of the Russian Tsars. In the period of Bolsheviks, it was, I would say, the communist idea, where in fact Russia was governed mainly by non-Russians, but it was Stalin who was Georgian. His Russian accent was very heavy, but nevertheless he was very much oriented to Russia as a great nation with global aspirations. And it is once again, I would say, this element, this motive is dominating in the new policy of President Putin. Fortunately for him, it was also a period of the enormous increase of the price for oil and gas. In other words, gas, the gas prices in the period when Putin took power were not only not tripled, but they were in 2 years five times, and it was even the moment that they were 10 times higher than in the moment when he took power. In that situation, prestige, popularity, I would say, reputation of President Putin was the highest, in fact, in the Russian history in recent century. He became the most popular, comparing, I would say, to his great predecessors. Altogether, Putin started, I would say, with an intention to organize Russia in a new way. What are the main problems of Russia? There are many. It is not my intention to speak about the Russian weaknesses, because I would say, in fact, they are obvious and known. But it seems to me that what is less analyzed by many is that Russia is governed by the group of people who mainly, predominantly, is formed by the special services, by the former KGB, by intelligence and counterintelligence. It never happened that a global power is governed, the country is run by the former spies. I would say that intelligence, by the definition, is usually, so to say, the officers of intelligence, they are selected from the group of professionally well-prepared people, intelligent people, who are, as a rule, very much instructed by their superiors. In Russia, is, I would say, the leader of the nation who is offering instruction for himself. He is, I would say, but nevertheless, his mentality and mentality of all those officers who were sent to government, to banking system, to all, as the editors-in-chief, to all media, all of them have the roots in the former KGB. In other words, that apparatus, this, I would say, this structure, was the only one who survived the collapse of the Soviet system. Party was dissolved, the state administration does not exist, and people from the KGB, it is the only organization which was presented to the people as the most professional, loyal to the state, and not corrupted. I'm not sure whether it is not corrupt, but definitely it is prepared as a kind of the organization which could be compared to the order, I would say, a kind of the convent. Nevertheless, situation is that they were really in a position to organize the country in totally new way. But unfortunately for Russia, such people are not prepared to offer a kind of the concept of modernization. And for Russia, modernization is the, in my view, the highest challenge, because country on one hand is very strong because of the two main factors. One is gas and oil. Russia has outside these raw materials, the resources biggest in the world, and some other resources as well. And in other words, raw materials, it is not very typical for the modern nation. Germany and Japan lost the war. They do not have raw materials, but nevertheless they are global powers. And the second element is nuclear arsenal. Altogether, in the world, we have at the moment a little bit less than 25,000 nuclear warheads, among them 10,000 in the United States and 15,000 in Russia, 5,000 in operational activities all over the country, and 10,000 at stocks to be destroyed. The destruction of the nuclear arsenal is very, very costly. Russia was not able to destroy the nuclear potential, and more or less 8 years ago, decision was taken within the program of the global threat reduction to offer Russia 20 billion, 10 by the United States and 10 billion by all the other highly industrialized countries, 2 billion per year to help them, to assist them in the process of destruction of nuclear weapons. And it seems to me that it was very good investment. It is in Russia's interest to destroy them. I'm not going out to describe the Russian situation in more details. I would like to offer you, before conclusion of my remarks, some comments which were made a year ago by President Medvedev, Prime Minister Putin, and Foreign Minister Lavrov. They offered for the world a new concept of the new security architecture. And this new security architecture, in my view, for many reasons, is justified, because the world is changed in very dramatic way after 20 years, and those structures which were established more than 60 years ago, very often they do not correspond to the new challenges, new threats, new risks. Altogether, I would say Putin, Medvedev and Lavrov, in many documents, statements, declarations presented for the first time in July 2008 and then in October once again and many times, that there is a need to have a new security architecture. And this security architecture is very interesting, is in fact oriented to offer for Russia a new position based on some new rules of conduct. It is not about the principles. Some principles are ignored, which were established in the past. Some of them are repeated. But I would like to say that, in my view, what is very important, I would say, to understand what is behind, what Russia would like to achieve by that new security architecture. And I would like to say that I prepared for myself such a list of 6 points. It is the political aims of Russia in this context is to regain status of European regional power with global ambitions, to establish on post-Soviet territory the zone of privileged interest, which is, I would say, by effect of intervention, military intervention in Georgia, to use both military might and nuclear potential and energy resources as instruments of political pressures, to establish and institutionalize the special relations with the United States and other global powers, to diversify European members within the European Union, in other words, strategic partnership with Germany, good relations with France, Spain, and Italy, and respect to those small and medium-sized states who accept the Russian rules of game, and to use in instrumental way the multilateral institutions. Since I was asked to speak for half an hour, I have still 2 minutes. I would like to say that in order to summarize the new identity of Russia, because Russia definitely is not and could not be identified with Soviet Union, it could not be identified with the Tsarist Russia, it is something qualitatively new. And in other words, Russia is neither Tsarist nor the Soviet Union. Main element of consolidation of multinational federation is, as I said, the great victory in the Second World War and the heroization of Stalin. The concept of modernization includes the rule of law, but interpreted within the doctrine of sovereign democracy. In other words, in my discussion with Russia, I'm saying very often that I would like to be in the moment, I would say, to witness a situation that the word democracy will be used without any adjectives, neither people democracy nor real democracy, genuine democracy, or sovereign democracy. It has to be democracy. And always when you have such a description, it means that it is a kind of a qualified democracy. Self-identification contains a lot of contradictory elements. Special role for special services. The anti-Russian conspiracy and plots as an excuse for the authoritarian rules. Always Russians are saying that they are surrounded by enemies and the whole world is conspiring against Russia. In other words, weaknesses, it is lack of confidence to the legal procedures and institutions. System based on clans, families, illegal or non-legal structures of Soviet traditions. Economy and modernization depend on raw resources. Lack of transparency and accountability. Corruption. The corruption, in my view, and as recently President Medvedev said, that corruption and legal nihilism, these are two diseases, a cancer which penetrates the state institutions. In Russian society is diversified. It is, I would say, for millions, the problem is how to survive. For hundreds of thousands, how to be rich. And for oligarchs, how to keep their wealth and influence. The political leadership of Russia is afraid to lose the control over developments on the vast territory of the state. And main contradiction is modernization versus decentralization, rule of law, and democratic standards. There is no threat of revolution, but it is threat of many revolts due to the worsening of crisis and the long tradition of legal nihilism and anarchy. Stalin is presented very often in Russia as a great political leader, not only as a great political leader, but an effective manager. And I told to my Russian partners that I know another one who was even more effective. I have in mind Beria was much more effective as the head of KGB. All in all, I would like to say that liberal opposition in Russia is marginalized, situation is under control, but future development is unpredictable. And for Poland, this is the main challenge in our relations with Russia. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Do you want a glass of water?
If possible.
Yeah.
If you have half of the glass.
Pat, could you nick out and get a glass of water for our speaker? If possible. This could you have me a glass of water from the kitchen? Yeah, someone get me a glass of water. Thanks. Things are difficult, these tasks, these burdens of life we share. Thanks very much for that. So we got to no later than 7 o'clock. So can I just take you back? You started off with the 70th anniversary of the end of the Second World War. And on that occasion, as I recall, the president of, the prime minister of Russia spoke about the Nazi-Soviet pact and essentially said that Russia regretted that, and that was a dark stain on Russian history. But the president of Russia seemed to go along with that other view that was prevailing in Russia, or was prevailing in Russia at the time, that somehow the outbreak of hostilities in 1939 was contributed to or caused by Poland. So the president seemed to come up with a rather anti-Polish statement, and the prime minister came up with a realistic statement. How do you work all that out?
Well,
would you just come back and talk straight into
it? Yes, I would like to say that, in my view, it is not the main contradiction between them. It is a contradiction between the coverage of the history in the Russian press, TV, in other words, for domestic reasons, and the speech which was offered in Poland for the external Western public. In other words, we have at the moment in Russia two elements. They are not, how to say, it is very difficult to reconcile them, both of them. In my view, the main problem is that what is positive in Putin's speech in Poland, that he said publicly for the first time that Pact Molotov-Ribbentrop was immoral. Yes, it is true. And he said it was immoral as the Munich Agreement of 38 in September 38 was immoral as well. And he's absolutely right. As far as the accusation against Poland, they were presented in the Russian press in very broadly. Even here in Sydney, I got some most recent articles in the Russian press, and all of them are strongly anti-Polish. But what is interesting, all of them are written by officers of the former KGB and present FSB, or the Service of External Intelligence. As a rule, in all the countries, intelligence is committed to collect information. In Russia, they have additional task, not only to collect, but to disseminate information, but as a rule, they are very much distorted. Why I'm saying this? Because it seems to me that at the moment, intellectuals, historians, people who would like to keep their names, they would like not to be involved in that propagandistic campaign, because they survived in Soviet Union a lot of this type of campaigns, and none of serious Russian scientists, none of the Russian researcher, historian, signed any of this article. In this group on difficult matters with Russia, there are 15 Poles and 15 Russians, and none of them took part in that campaign. It is very positive, because it means that something is changed, and nobody else wanted to do so but those who are paid for this type of campaign. Well, I would like to say that no doubts, Poland in the interwar period made a lot of mistakes. And in my view, the one of the greatest mistakes in Polish foreign policy was the fact that immediately after the Munich Agreement, when Czechoslovakia, in fact, was condemned to fail as a state, and Hitler took a great part of this country, Sudetenland, the district of the Sudeten Mountains. Poland decided, obviously, to take very small district where, in fact, with overwhelming majority of Polish population, which was divided as a result of the Versailles Treaty. It was unnecessary and it was shameful. Fortunately, Polish president wrote apologies to the Czech people, saying that it was not only a mistake, it was also a sin. And it seems to me, and I'm saying to Russians, that we are expecting something similar from the Russian side addressed to Polish people.
Right, so there's a question down the back. Yep.
Professor, I was surprised by your comment about the Yalta Agreement in 1945. I'm originally Czechoslovak, and it was, and I can only interpret my parents' beliefs, that Yalta was almost as bad as Munich. Because Stalin wanted a sphere on his western border as a buffer against Germany. As I understood it, the Russians always feared Germans. And it may have been written that Poland was to be a free country, but still the buffer between Russia and Germany was part of it, and I cannot understand how it could be both.
Well, I would like to say that I said that as a kind of the...
Could you go back to talking right into the microphone? Yeah.
Yes. I said this as a kind of the intellectual provocation. I would like to say that my intention was to say that with Yalta or without Yalta, it would be the same. Without Yalta, Russian forces were in the center of Germany. And let's take for a while that Yalta did not exist. Does it mean that Russia's policy would be better? In my view, it would be worse. In other words, for the Western powers, it was a kind of excuse, because they have had on paper something what was not taken seriously by Russians, and they knew that. Churchill knew that Stalin will definitely not implement what he promised in Yalta. By the way, I would like to tell you that it happened that in 1984, in Foreign Affairs, for the 40th anniversary of the Yalta Agreement, Zbigniew Brzeziński wrote a very interesting essay, and the essay started, the first phrase of the essay I still remember was, "Yalta is unfinished business," saying that there is a lot of promises, and we still expect that 40 years after or later on they will be implemented. And I would like to say that it is the irony. I would like not to be taken in that sense seriously. I would like to say that if an agreement of Yalta is taken seriously, then it happened only after 89. But, of course, my intention is to say the following, that very often people consider that some agreements are of fundamental nature. They are saying it is breakthrough, etc. I would like to say that agreements are very important. They are significant under the condition that they correspond to the reality. If they are offered for people as an excuse, then it should be seen what in the United States people are saying, the public diplomacy, and in Russia, propaganda. In other words, it has nothing to do with the reality, and in fact, they are worth as much as the paper on which they were presented.
Okay, there's a question right down the back, and then we'll come up the middle, and we'll come up here.
Professor, you mentioned the new security architecture that's in the minds of the leadership of Russia. You also have an interest in nuclear proliferation control. Bertrand Russell and others have postulated the concept of a global military power that would arbitrate between warring nations. How do you see the susceptibility of the Russian intelligentsia and leadership towards that sort of concept? And how long do you think it might take for them to come around to thinking positively about that sort of global...
Well, I would say it is not only a very important but fundamental question. There is no simple answer. As you remember, immediately after the end of the Cold War in 89, George Bush Sr., President of the United States, presented the concept which was known New World Order. Nobody followed, I would say, what happened with this concept. It was presented as a great strategy, but that strategy after 3 months was forgotten. Why he presented that strategy? Because people at that time were with a lot of hopes, a kind of the very naive, idealistic expectations that after such a change it is possible to establish the new system based on common values. And in my view, we are 20 years after in a situation that once again many people, including President Obama, are expecting that there is a need to have a kind of the new architecture. Now, what kind of architecture is presented by Russia? This architecture is based mainly on the concept of concert of powers. Very often it is this element, concert of powers, which was invented in 19th century by Metternich, and Kissinger is a great admirer of this concept and many others. This concept was implemented in 1815 up to 1853. In other words, dominating great powers took the responsibility for stability of Europe. My answer is such a concept does not correspond with the new realities. Lavrov, as foreign minister of Russia, said that it is the best pattern which was exercised in the history of mankind. And now he proposed that instead of 19th century partners within this concert of powers, now it has to be initiated by Troika. Russia, United States, he said in different order. He said the United States, European Union and Russia. And for obvious reason, my first question is, and what about China? What about India? What about Brazil? What about many other countries who are not global powers? They do not aspire even to be a great powers, but they would like to be respected. Putin in Poland, he said that the Second World War, the origins, the roots of the Second World War, were in the results of the First World War. They were, in fact, initiated by the Versailles Treaty, not because Germany lost the war, he said, but because Great Germany was humiliated. And he's probably right to some extent. But the problem is that his intention was to say that great powers should not be humiliated. And my response is that small and medium-sized countries should not be humiliated as well, not only great powers. In other words, there is a need to think at the moment about all the countries. Situation changed in dramatic way. In the United States, many people, they are really very much convinced that it is enough to offer for Russia a new type of very fair, honest, and open-minded, I would say, concept. For example, Russians criticized the concept of the missile defense and anti-missile installations which were planned on Polish territory, 10 interceptors and radar in the Czech Republic. And it is enough to respond in positive way to Russian expectations, I would say to suspend or cancel this project, and relations will be established in new way. There, it is very naive and idealistic approach, because in international relations there are two elements decisive for functioning of the system. One is definitely values, set of values, and another one is harmonization of interest, balance of interests. And in my view, in case that such a system has to be established, there is a need to define what kind of expectations are offered to Russia, in other words, that after the Obama's declaration on 17th of September, I listened with great attention to this speech, and I did not find, I would say, the element what has to be offered by Russia in reciprocity. Russia reacted to that speech of Obama, saying that it is a good step in the right direction. And I would like to say that you cannot construct a new security system based on unilateral concessions. I will not continue because the time is limited. And
no, there's a question in the middle there, yes. And we're going to be quick with that question, then we'll have our responses.
Two other questions.
Well, they're going to be quick.
Yeah. What do Polish people, ordinary people, think of the Katyn massacre? And two,
do you think the Katyn massacre, what do Polish people think about that?
Second question is, do you expect the Ukrainians to maintain sovereignty?
Well, two very interesting and important questions, because within this group on difficult matters, Katyn was the central issue, and I would like to say that for Poles it is, I would say, very sensitive, vulnerable, and to be very frank, it is impossible to establish a new type, qualitatively new relations, better relation with Russia without resolving this question. And what does it mean, resolving this question? I would like to say, first of all, that we expect that Russians will condemn this as a crime. And this is Stalinist crime. There were a lot of crimes against Russian people, against Ukrainians, but this was very specific, not only against Polish nation, against Polish officers, but it was with an intention to eliminate the Polish elite. And the same was done, by the way, by Germans in that part which was occupied by Germany, where Polish professors, for example, in Krakow, were invited, I would say, to inauguration of academic year in the 3rd of October 39, and all of them were arrested and sent to the concentration camp. And I would like to say that it was the same in many cities of Poland. In other words, two occupying powers, they exercise the same policy, which was the policy of great crimes, and it has to be condemned. Second element, that we need kind of the access to all the documents which were recognized in Russia as secret. They are not; they should not be secret. Russians, by the way, accused Poland that it was not, that they said, okay, it happened, but Poland started with the crimes against Russia, that Russian prisoners of war in 1920-22 were treated in the same way. In my capacity as Secretary of State in the Foreign Ministry and then a minister, I asked the Central Archives of Poland to offer for Russia all the documents, to invite them and to publish all the documents which are about the Soviet or Russian, in, at that time Soviet Union did not exist in 20, that Soviet Russia existed, and to offer them all the documents. They were published. And what is interesting, when the documents were published both in Polish and Russian, and Russians promised to organize in 2005 a presentation of the book. Up to now, this book is still in the closed rooms in Russia. Always when I ask them why you are not offering for the broader public, they are saying time is not ripe for that. And I do believe that I will be a witness when the time will come and the Russians will say the truth. In other words, truth is a kind of the basic element. About Ukraine,
I would like to be very brief on Ukraine because it's another country.
About Ukraine, my intention is to say definitely Ukraine will exist as an independent country. To what extent it will be sovereign, it is an open question.
Okay. Now, we don't have a lot of time. There's a question here, perhaps down the back. We've got to be quick. Yeah.
Well, I won't go into history and deep into the war, but I'm glad you mentioned Georgia and this Polish wisdom on attacking us. I can't ask for money in connection while the Germany ringing, while the West sitting there and hopping. You know, that wasn't a very clever episode.
Yes, I do.
But my main question is, you seem to imply that Russia is still some kind of a threat. Of course, during the Russia of the communist country, the perception is a great communist, is going expanding, taking over, dominant theory. The vision of your destruction, in a way, is still there. But you look at Russia, and I'm not for a moment supporting Russia, the perception, you still regard Russia as kind of a threat to Europe. What is the role of NATO? What is the shield against Russia? I mean, we still see Russia as some kind of a
threat. Okay, the question is, do you still regard Russia as some kind of threat? And what is the role of NATO and what is the role of the shield?
Yeah. Yes, in short, I would say Russia is not a threat, a direct threat at the moment. Russia is not preparing a sudden and unexpected attack against Poland. Definitely not. In my view, it is a threat for Poland, for Europe, for the world. Not Russia who is preparing an aggression, but development within Russia. In other words, the threat is at the moment coming not from the East, but the threat is in the East. In other words, if Russia is determined, I would say, to initiate the new type of development based on the rule of law. I'm intentionally not using the word democratic development. It is enough the rule of law. Then definitely this country will be predictable. At the moment we don't know. As I said, in my view, the main problem is uncertainty and unpredictability. This is the problem. And it was another...
Briefly about NATO.
NATO. I would say that definitely there is a need to adapt NATO to the new situation, and this group you mentioned of 12 experts, it is with intention to elaborate the new strategy, and this strategy should confront, I would say, the new developments with the structures and procedures which were much more adapted to the past than to the future.
Okay, there's a question here. Hang on, I'm calling a question here. Yeah.
Do the Poles feel upset by Obama's decision to, get rid of the idea of the nuclear shield?
The question is, do the Poles feel upset by President Obama's decision to get rid of the shield out of Poland?
It depends. I would say there are some Poles who are upset and there are some who are very happy. For the reason that majority of Polish people was against the American installation. The political elite was very much engaged for this. In other words, it is a great disappointment for the elite and a kind of the divided reaction as far as the broader constituency is concerned.
And who were you with, the elite or the American?
Yes, I will tell you that I was not very typical in a sense that I considered and I do consider still that the question of the missile defense is over-politicized and it is oversimplified because there are two aspects, military and political. Military, it was to protect the United States. Politically, it was important for Poland to invite the American forces and to have a kind of the additional guarantees. And one can find some other elements which could compensate, I would say, this decision of President Obama.
I'm with the Polish elites and you're not, you see. Question down the back.
Professor, you spoke about Russia adopting the Nordic cracking model, keeping with the history of Stalin and the Tsars and so on. How much do you think that's strike-like-y? Is there really a general interest in a more democratic way, or are they indeed less interested in that and happy to adopt that model with a, albeit benevolent dictator?
Yes. If I were an advisor. I never was invited, but to play the role. If I were among the advisors of Russian leadership, I would say that I do understand the main Russia's, I would say, dilemma, that it is a vast territory with a lot of the centrifugal tendencies. And the main problem for all Russian governments, doesn't matter whether it is Putin, Medvedev or somebody else, is how to prevent the fate of the Soviet Union for Russia. In other words, what happened with the Soviet Union by the end of the 80s might happen with the Russian Federation in the future. So this should be, it is probably taken by them as the priority number one. On the other hand, Russia has to be modernized and cannot be modernized in authoritarian way as it happened, I would say, under Stalin in 30s. Russians are very often speaking about the Chinese model, but in my view it is the worst what could be done, and then it would be the real threat, because authoritarian regime plus modernization is leading very often to the catastrophe and to the aggression against the neighbors.
Just a final question. Just tell us briefly what you do at the Difficult Matters Commission. I mean, you're the co-chairman. Does it meet in Warsaw? Does it meet in Moscow? How often does it meet?
Well, I would like to say that this, the idea of this commission was for the first time mentioned in 2002, but it was never convened, and in 2008 it was not re-established, but it was really established for the first time, and they, as I said, they are on both sides more or less 15 intellectuals, independent scientists, researchers, experts. And our intention from the very beginning was how to define what does it mean difficult matters. Some people, when they were told that I'm appointed for the group on difficult matters, they said that in relations with Russia, everything is difficult. Yes, I said that it is true. It is true, but there are a lot of institutions, for example, Foreign Ministry, Ministry of Justice, Ministry of Police, Defense, etc., who should deal with all the matters which are difficult, but they are within their competence. In other words, I considered and I suggested to Russians that we should deal with the problems not covered by the others. In other words, there are some problems of very specific nature. One of them was mentioned, for example, cutting massacre. Another one is consequences of Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact, origins of the Second World War, repression of the Polish population on the Russian territory, arrest of the Polish leader, the underground Polish government, who was arrested. And by the way, I would like to tell you that they were arrested under communist regime immediately after entrance of the Russian army on Polish territory, and Polish territory was governed by the communists. And in the communist Poland, they were not able, they did not have confidence that the trial could be organized in Poland. They took all the leaders to Moscow, 16 leaders, and they were sentenced in Moscow in 45. In other words, all these problems with historical roots, they are dealt with in commission. We, at the beginning, we defined 15 problems, and we decided that all these problems should be presented to the broader public in the form of expertise written by Polish writer and the Russian writer. In other words, in mirror concept, that facts are not disputed, but interpretation, explanation, understanding should be presented in order to understand why controversy is so deep that we cannot come to the common ground based on the same facts. And this is in the final stage of preparation, such volume, which was originally meant as one volume, but I suppose there will be three volumes, because I have already 800 pages, and originally we thought about 300 pages. Altogether, I would like to say this is one. And my intention was to open a parallel way of reconciliation. By the way, the word reconciliation between Poland and Russia was very difficult to use, because my Russian partners, when I told them that we should think about the process of reconciliation, they said, we cannot accept the word reconciliation because we were never enemies. You can reconcile with enemies. But we considered that our relations were friendly, brotherhood, etc. Okay, I did not insist on the word. And recently, I would like to say that Putin in Poland spoke for the first time about reconciliation, saying the pattern for the relation between Poland and Russia should be the relation between Russia and Germany. And my understanding was and still is that Poland is much closer to Berlin and Russia, to Berlin and Moscow, than Moscow and Berlin. In other words, we are in the middle. But relations for with Germany, we initiated the reconciliation in, let's say, in 65 with the letter of the Polish bishops addressed to the German bishops. And I would like to tell you that this letter was not an easy task for the bishops, because it was written against the great majority, not only of the communist government, not only against the majority of Polish people, but against the majority of hierarchy in the Polish Catholic Church. In other words, those who have written that letter, it was in minority, small group, very courageous people, including later Pope John Paul II, who as Cardinal at that time still Bishop Karol Wojtyla, signed that letter. And I would like to say that my intention was to initiate something similar with Russia. It happened. I would say these days, today, yesterday, and the day before yesterday, it is in Poland the first delegation of the Russian Orthodox Church who decided to come to Poland with request to offer them the copy of the Virgin Mary from Częstochowa, which is, I would say, the most respected icon in the Catholic Church in Poland, to offer that copy and to consecrate one of the chapels where the Polish officers were killed, as a kind of the, not monument, but the spiritual dimension of this initiated process of the possible future reconciliation. It seems to me that this decision of the Russian Orthodox Church to send the delegation, which is on the very low level, by the way, and in my view it is better than it is on the low level, because we have still before us a long way to come to the final stage, but nevertheless the process is initiated, and I would like to say that it is something very positive.
Many thanks. Thank you.
We're right on 7 o'clock, so I'll be very brief. Certainly, Poland is a very important nation. A lot of Poles came to Australia and settled very successfully here. But Poland is also a nation that's entrenched in history, as our speaker has demonstrated tonight. And it was important to have someone come along and talk about Poland and Russia, two very important nations at a very significant time, and talk about the history going back to 1939 and beyond 1939. So I'd like to say very briefly thanks to Mark Berger and the Australian Institute of Polish Affairs for making this possible. Thank to Professor Rothfeld for coming and talking to the Sydney Institute about his important work in Poland, in many fields, but including the Polish-Russian group on difficult matters. The speech will be up on our pod within a day or so, and we'll have a paper for the Sydney papers online. But for tonight, many thanks for an important and stimulating talk. Thank you.
You have been listening to the Sydney Institute podcast. This podcast is proudly brought to you through the support of Microsoft Australia. We hope you enjoyed listening and can join us again soon.